This is the continuation of the interview with Mary Azadorian by Norma Azadorian on October 27, 2001. This is tape two, side one. You were talking about AB's Tavern and what kind of man your father was. Can you tell me another example or two of how he interacted with the soldiers or the other people in Lincoln Place?
Well, to him, once they were drafted and they were in the army, they were men. And when he found that one of his boys was 17 years old, I never saw my father cry so hard in his life that this 17-year-old boy was in a uniform. And the boy was at the last week of the month, had very little money in his pocket, and my father told him as long as he was there, he got all the drinks, all the food he wanted, and if he needed a warm coat for the winter, he'd got to get him a warm coat. And my boy said, I'm only 17. He said, you're old enough to fight, you're old enough to drink. But my father watched him very closely, made sure he never drank more than one or two beers. But my father had a heart of gold. He really did. And the civilians, let me use that term, started to turn against my father because he was paying more attention to the GIs than to them. And my father says, why not? They're here to save our skins. Why are you jealous of these boys? But he always, always made sure that they had plenty to eat and, of course, drink well. And he would get what they called back then half pints of whiskey. Cases of them. And each GI that came into our tavern and said goodbye to my dad for the last time got a bottle of whiskey from him as a going away gift. And then he got stuck with income tax. But
Tell us about that?
Well, the thing is, I always had a standing joke. My father would go take a nap between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. And when they'd come in and say, where's Abe? I'd say, he's taking a nap. Well, can I wait? No, no, no. If President of the United States walked in, nobody. He could sleep till 3. This man walked in one day and he wanted to talk to Abe. And I said, Abe's sleeping. But please, it's very important. I got to talk to him. I said, I'm sorry, sir. You're not even the president. I wouldn't even wake him for the president. And he pulled out a badge, FBI. He said, will this do it? I said, what the hell do you want with my father? I said, well, not realizing what time it was, I heard the back door of the tavern open. It was my father walking in. And I said, oh, here he is now. It must be 3 o'clock. And my father says, what? I said, he's from the FBI. What you want? I didn't bother my dad, and I'm shaking like a leaf. And he said, tax evasion. No, 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 no tax evasion. AB pay his tax every penny. Maybe old, no government. This government, mine. I pay my government. And of course, my mother had walked in. She didn't know what was going on, and my mother was a crier. All you had to do is yell, and she'd cry. So I said, okay, let's all calm down. Tell me what this is all about. Well, it seems back in 1937 or 38, they had passed a law that every shot, every drop of beer that came out of a barrel, every shot that came out of a whiskey bottle had to be taxed. But nobody bothered to tell the tavern owners. All the aldermen knew, but they never mentioned it.
So he was paying income taxes and thinking that was all he had.
Yeah. And the guy told him, he had a record. I said, it floored me. All the cases of these half pints that my father had bought were listed, and each bottle, how many came out of each bottle. And my father said, I bought that. That was mine. I want to take it and dump it in the sewer. I could dump it. He said, but you have to pay for each shot. So he got stung with $8,000 back taxes. But
money back then.
Yeah, it was very much. But somehow or another, they found out that my father really, really, really was innocent in this whole thing. And it came down to $3,500, which wasn't bad. But there was a tavern owner in Madison who fought him and ended up paying $28,000. So So my father ended up pretty good. But that kind of broke his spirit then, a little.
And where did you live at that time?
I was already married and living at 2117 Grand Avenue. And the reason I know all this is because I used to bring my kids down and work in the tavern and help my dad so he'd still continue his afternoon naps. But in the 1953 September, there was that fire.
Where was that?
That was in Lincoln Place. It destroyed my dad's tavern, our home, the building across the street, and the building next to that, facing the same side of the street.
What streets were these?
Niedring House and Chestnut. And then the fire changed and went across the street to Niedring House, and it kind of burned a couple of businesses there, but not the damage that it already done to us. And my father lost everything.
Well, I've heard this be called the Great Lincoln Place Fire. Is that
yeah.
true?
Yeah. Matter of fact, thinking they're going to give my father a consolation, they said, you know, A.B., your wall became a, your building became a wall to keep the fire from spreading. My father said he didn't give a damn if all Lincoln Place went after his went, but the one wall stayed and it stopped the fire. And there was no fire in the fire hydrants. I mean, no water in the fire hydrant. The depot came in and saved it.
The city wouldn't come down to Lincoln Place?
The city was there, but there was no water.
Oh, I see. Were the buildings in Lincoln Place made of brick or
wood? Well, ours was. Ours was a two-story brick with a barber shop and a cleaning shop and the tavern. And behind that was a six-room home.
And that was where your family lived?
Yes, that's where we lived, and it was all gone. All gone.
So all your memories, all your pictures?
Oh yeah. We were getting ready, my husband and my two kids. My daughter wasn't born yet. We were going to go visit a friend of ours who had just had a child. And we got this phone call from these two sisters I had talked earlier about. One of them, Evelyn, called and she said, Mary? I said, yeah. She said, honey, do you know your dad's place is on fire? I said, Ev, you're kidding. And she said, I could see it from the where I'm living. They lived upstairs, so she could see all the way down. And I said, oh my God. And I told Ed, I said, we can't go anywhere. There's a fire in Lincoln Place. They say Pop's place is on fire. We couldn't go. We were stuck. We had to drive all the way around. And when we still couldn't go. Cops wouldn't let us in. And I said, you're not stopping me. That's my dad's place. So I left my husband and two kids, and he took the kids back to his mother and father, and he came. And there's my father, I'll never forget as long as I live, standing all by himself on the street corner with his hands in his pockets, playing with the keys to his business establishment and tears running down his face like a baby crying. And when he saw me, he kind of perked up. And I said, where's Mom and Grandma? And he said, down on the corner. And I went there, and they're working on my grandmother. And I thought, what's wrong here? Well, she saw my father go into the cleaning shop, but she never saw him come out when the building collapsed. And she passed out. Well, they wake, when she revived, they said, there's your son standing right there, you know. And so I had to bring them all. And then we had company from Istanbul, Turkey, living with us at the time. And they lost everything. So I brought them all to my mother-in-law's home, my father-in-law's home, and we took over. That's all there is to it. But I'll tell you, if you have never been in a house fire of any kind, don't. It's devastating. There's nothing like it. And I give 100% credit to any fireman. That includes my own son.
Why do you say it's devastating? I mean, obviously everything is lost that you have.
The fire itself. Mm-hmm. Now you gotta remember, that was alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it was swooshing out across the street. I mean, how could I explain it now? It was almost like a bridge.
So the flames were shooting out from the openings?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And they called in the Army Depot soldiers to stand guard for looting. Of course, I don't know what there was to loot. Two people were killed in the fire. One went back for a social security check. And the other was an older woman who was having trouble trying to get out and couldn't, was overcome by smoke. And
where did they live?
They lived in the Topegan building. And that was this. Now, we lived on the corner of Chestnut and Niedring House. And across the street on the corner of Chestnut and Niedring House was the Koloff building. Next to the Koloff building was the Topegan building. All of that was gone. All gone.
No one in your family was injured or killed?
No, thank God for that.
But you lost everything?
Oh, yeah.
How did they start over?
Well, when I say they lost everything, some GI ran around the back of the house, and my grandmother never locked her windows. So he opened one of the windows and grabbed everything he could and threw it on the bed and pulled the whole bed sheet up and threw it out in the alley. That was the only thing we had. Sheets, a couple of pictures, some clothes. Now my mother, and it was so hot and drought, no rain for I don't know how long, that my mother was walking around with a sleeveless dress on, no bra, and my mother was not a skinny woman. She weighed 248 pounds, so she was two-ton Lizzie running around with this outfit on, and that's all she had on was her underpants and this dress. But the next morning, my mother-in-law and my husband went shopping to Clark's Dry Goods Store, and Ed told Mrs. What the world was her name? A wonderful Barrett, Mrs. Barrett. And she asked Ed, she said, what happened to Miss Abby? And he said, they're living with us and we're here to get some clothes for them. She said, don't worry, because she knew my mother's size and everything. So she got all the clothes that my mother needed, two sets of each, like two sets of underwear and everything with two dresses and stuff. And then she did the best she could for my father. And as far as my grandmother was concerned, well, my grandmother was, what, 140 pounds? Easy to dress. And all she wore was cotton socks and cotton pants and cotton slips with a cotton dress and a cotton apron, you know. And typical foreign woman. But for 2 days, at least they had decent outfits until my father was able to get his bank statements straightened out, and then they went and bought some clothes.
Did the people of Lincoln Place come to your family's assistance?
Yes, they offered. They really did. I can't say they didn't. But my father, being a proud man, no. And one of them was your father, grandfather, who Bucko, your Uncle Bucko, called long distance, and they weren't speaking, you know. And he told him, you take them to our home, and you keep them there till we get back. Well, I had already made arrangements to take them to my home. And he says, and anything they want. See, no matter how much you don't talk to each other, that love is still there. That love.
And I've heard that a lot of the immigrants that came to Lincoln Place, especially among the Armenians, that sometimes whole villages came and settled in the same areas. Is that true?
I don't know. I really couldn't say. There were a lot of Armenians from a lot of different villages. They were from Moush, they were from Kali, they were from Pelvilsis.
How do you spell that?
I don't know.
Say it again.
Pelvilsis, I think is the way it's pronounced. But there were more Karetsis, like your grandfather and my father. And of course, Kali, the town of Kali, comes from Erzurum. Erzurum was a big city, and these were little villages in there. And there were my father really came from Hedif, and there was only one other person from Hedif, and that was Manugia, Mrs. Manugia. So they ended up calling each other brother and sister.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that a lot of people lived in your house. It sounded like more than just father, mother, and children.
At our home?
At your father's home. There was the grandparents also. Did other people?
We had a bachelor living upstairs. This was in 1649 Maple Street until we opened it, when I was 15, we moved over to the Pegan Building. He was a bachelor, and my grandmother had the upstairs. It had two bedrooms. One she gave to this bachelor. He was supposed to pay rent. I don't think he ever paid rent in his life. And then we had another bachelor that lived in town, but he spent all day with us. He ate with us. My mother washed his clothes. I mean, he became our uncle that we never had. And what an uncle he turned out to be. I'll tell you, I wish everybody had an uncle like him. And
what was his name?
Nishan Harabedian. Wonderful man. But anyway, and then eventually when we opened the tavern, my mother walked around from November through December collecting a nickel here and a dime there to open this tavern. And she got enough money to pay the rent, but some bachelor man paid the license the first 5 years for us. Never took a penny.
So is this common that lots of relatives lived in the same house and sometimes other boarders lived there and you helped each other get businesses started?
That's why today I am tired of having people live with me. I've had people live with me all my life. Now, I had wonderful grandparents. I can't say I didn't. I don't ever remember my grandfather working a day in his life. Where he ever got money, I'll never know. But he was not a cheat, and he was not a drunkard. He was nothing, but people adored him. And he got a lot of free meals. If you had seen him, you would have known why. A lot of free meals. But he lived with us, and this John, for whatever his last name, lived with us. And then we lived in that above the tavern, and there were bachelors living there. And then when I got married and moved to 2117 Grand Avenue, we had the whole Azadorian clan there, plus my mother-in-law had roomers. So I've had people living with me. I lived 19 years with my mother-in-law and 15 years with my sister-in-law. Now I'm living 54 years with my husband.
So this extended family living together is typical of of the Armenians or of immigrants?
All immigrants.
All of them.
Yeah. They make sure they take care of each other. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one good thing about them.
How long did your grandparents and your parents live?
My grandfather had his wish. 1939, September 1st, Germany walked into Poland. And he turned to me and he said, if God is with me, he'll take me before I see my grandsons go. My grandfather died that November of a stroke. He was 65, something like that.
So you don't know exactly when he was born?
Oh, no. It's all guesswork. And my grandmother lived till 1955. And she died of cancer.
Do you have any idea about how old she might have been?
Well, our physician at the time, I asked him, I said, Dr. Karras, we have no idea how old my grandmother is. He said, Mary, the only thing I can say is she'll never see 80 again. So she had to be over 80.
And I've heard that Armenians are very long-lived people.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Do you think that's because of their diet, or...? just inherited?
I think they're hard-headed. They're determined people. They're not going to let anybody get them down. And yes, their diet has a lot to do with it. They eat a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruit, and a lot of fish. No, they're... My mother could never understand how come I don't eat fish and fruit. Because she lived on it. Of course, she, like I said, she weighed 248, too.
What did you do for entertainment with your friends, like when you were a teenager or in your 20s? Can you
tell? All right, here is my schedule. I worked for my dad 7 days a week. And I mean 7 full days a week. Until about end of 44, beginning of 45, I started going out. I told my dad, you go to your Westerns on Friday nights, I'm going to go to my dance. I love to dance. So I would always go to the White Swan, and there would be 3 or 4 of us girls who would walk to town, would catch the Alton streetcar, and the conductor got to know us so well, he would slow the streetcar down and would jump off and run down into the highway and go to White Swan. But we always got a ride home by the boys from Lincoln Place. They always made sure we got home. And so I started going out on Wednesday nights, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And my father says, I get one night, you get four. I said, that's right. But I'll tell you, I enjoyed myself tremendously. I never missed out on anything. I didn't date because, like I said, the GIs would never let me date. It's not that I was anything special. It's just that they didn't trust that guy to be with me. After all, I was AB's daughter.
So you were more like a sister?
Yes. And so no matter where I went, I'd run across some GI. Hey, Mary, how's Pop? You know, and they'd put their arm around me. Nobody knew that we weren't related or anything. They never knew. But yes, I enjoyed myself very much, very much. I didn't miss out on a thing.
Is that unusual that you were allowed to date in that time period?
We started to make a joke, and God, it was a joke, believe me. Thank God for the war. The girls from Lincoln Place were reprieved.
Because?
Because the boys were gone, and all they had were their daughters, and they couldn't control their daughters. The daughters became, hey, we have a right too, you know.
So you were more Americanized at that point?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, I don't think there was one person in Lincoln Place. See, I could only refer to Lincoln Place. Mm-hmm. One person in Lincoln Place that ignored a soldier walking the street. I really don't think so. They were all very good to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the depot, I've heard, was a big part of the economy there, not just for the tavern that your father owned.
Oh, no, it helped. It helped mm-hmm. Granite City tremendously.
What kinds of other little businesses were there in Lincoln Place?
Grocery stores, cleaning shops. Matter of fact, a young lady even opened a dress shop and did very well in it, very well. There was a beauty shop. You know, come to think of it, I'd forgotten all about these. Thank you for reminding me. Like I said, there was our tavern, a barber shop, and a cleaning shop in one establishment. And across the street was the beauty shop. And on the corner on one side was a tavern, and behind, on the other side was another tavern. And so there were quite a few taverns and quite a few grocery stores. There were, 4 or 5 grocery stores. There was, let's see, Mitzoff's, Wharton's, Lovichoff's, Kirchhoff's, and Steinhoff's. Yeah, there were 5 of them.
Were there any bakeries?
There were 2 bakeries. And they made excellent, excellent bread. But they also baked for the women who would bake with these bakery trays. You know, you didn't fit those in your little oven, so you had to take them to the bakery. Matter of fact, I'd go to a bakery to pick some bread up when this woman walked in, who's an excellent cook. And I asked her, I said, Miss Stossoff, what'd you make? I made bed egg. I said, oh, okay. And he was going to put it in the oven. She said, Chris, what do you think you're doing? Yeah, I'm putting it in the oven, not without the newspaper on top. And he pulled it back out, and he laid newspaper on top of that bed egg, and she timed it. And then when she said, okay, take it out, he took it out, removed the paper. Paper had scorched on top, but it was the most beautiful golden brown you'd ever seen in your life. It was absolutely beautiful, excellent.
That was to keep the pastry
from burning.
And what kind of ovens did he have?
Oh, those big bakery ovens with the paddles that were so big that it put a child in it and shove it in there.
So was it a stone oven or a brick oven?
Brick, I think. I think they were brick
ovens. You said his name was Chris?
One was Chris and the other was, I hate to say it, they called him Hambur, which means hunchback, you know, because he walked with them. Mm-hmm. But they both did good business. And someone even opened a diner one block from the depot that made good build-up, you know, business.
Do you think that Lincoln Place has changed now?
Yes.
How is it different now?
I don't think they're as friendly. I really don't.
Do the same type of people live there?
No, I don't think so. But I will say this. They have bought homes cheap down there, and they have built them up to where they're pretty homes. And I don't blame them if they're young couples and can't afford to go out and buy a $200,000 home that could afford to buy a $75,000 home and spend the $10,000 or $20,000 on it and fix it up the way they want. What's the difference where it is? As long as your next door neighbor is as clean as you are. That's the catch, is your next door neighbor as clean as you are. See, when we were growing up there, we were immaculate. I mean, I remember getting licked from another woman because I broke into her basement with her daughter. And we ate and left a mess in the kitchen. And she walked right in, took a hold of me and whacked me on the buttocks. Mama didn't say one word. Nobody interfered.
How big were the homes? Most of the homes?
Well, usually a 4 or 5 room home, one bath. With
and
about 3 or 4 kids.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Typically, how many children?
Yeah.
When do you think Lincoln Place started changing? You said it's not the same anymore.
That I couldn't tell you because you got to remember I moved out in 1947 when I got married. And the only dealing I had with Lincoln Place then was going to church every Sunday.
An Armenian church?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Can you describe that?
It's a beautiful service. It is similar to the Catholic church with an open altar. The Catholics have an open altar. And yet it's similar to the Greek Orthodox church, although the Greek Orthodox church has just 3 arches. And our service is done in Armenian, although the reverend we have now, born and raised here in this country, does speak a lot of English in it, which he has to, because we have a lot of intermarriages. And I give credit to these young girls who are learning the Armenian language and the Armenian chants by the phonetics in the book. But the songs are strictly Armenian. And I've told them, I'm not anyone special, but I've told our Reverend, you, the first time you sing one of those songs in English, you'll never see my face in this church again. I'll tolerate a lot of it. But when you start doing that, because it'll ruin it, like it ruined the Catholic Church. I mean, I didn't understand Latin, and there's a lot of things in Armenian I don't understand, and yet my daughter thinks I'm one of the greatest there is. It loses. It becomes cold. There's no warmth there. And he says he never will, and I hope he doesn't. He's training. By rights, women are not allowed on our altar, but we are short of little boys. So he asked the Archbishop special permission, to use these little girls from age of 5 to at least the age of 11
to do the candles, and he got reprimanded by one of our former clergies. What are you doing, changing the rules? You know girls aren't allowed on the altar. How could those little girls do damage? What they mean by women on the altar is once that time period comes in. You know what I'm referring to? And they become women. That's when they're not allowed on the altar. Now, if you're in past that, your menopause, you're dry up like a bone, you can get up on the altar in your stocking feet and clean it, because you're clean as far as they're concerned. In between, you cannot get up on the altar. And so he's been training for these little girls to be candle bearers on the altar, and we are proud of that.
So are these traditions that go back
into
Armenian history?
Yes, yes.
What type of religion is the Armenian religion?
Armenian Apostolic, Gregorian.
So is that
the old Gregorian? You've heard of the old Gregorian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it goes back to those days.
So this is a Christian religion?
Yes, yes it is.
And it's called Armenian Orthodox?
Armenian Apostolic.
Apostolic. And when did Armenians...
Wait a minute. Armenian Orthodox, Armenian Apostolic. Yeah, it could be either one, I think.
When did Armenians become Christian? Have they been Christian for a long time?
305 A.D. 301 A.D. is when St. Gregory had his dream that if you build me a church here, he was thrown in a dungeon by King Thertad, who was a pagan lover. And he gets sick, and nobody could cure him. And someone said, well, there is one man that could cure him.